Coming to you from Linux World in San Francisco, California, this is Novell Open Audio. Welcome to Novell Open Audio, the podcast that connects the Novell user community with what's going on inside and around the Novell universe. This is Novell's podcast. You can check it out at novell.com/open audio. And this is the first time we've ever done this in front of a live audience. We kicked off around February or so this year. So I want to say thanks to everybody who's here. Thanks for coming out. Thanks to our listeners who have joined us here. And my name is Ted Hager.
And I'm Aaron Quill.
We're the hosts of Novell Open Audio. And today we're doing kind of a special event here because this gentleman in between Aaron and I here, and we keep him here so we can, you know, wrestle answers out of him. He is Nat Friedman, and he is pretty much one of the top luminaries in the area of desktop Linux. He is the engineering manager, vice president of engineering for SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, which we've just recently released, and is being showcased all around this show here. So we say, Nat, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And so,
wow, thank you. I'll see you later.
We want to ask Nat a few questions here and find a few things out. And we want to start it off today with just kind of an overview, Nat, if you will. Your company you started was Zimian. Tell us about what Zimian was and why you got into it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. It's quite strange to talk here in front of an audience like this. I've never done this before, but yeah, so Zimian was a company that Miguel de Acasa and I started in late 1999, kind of like when that was the thing you were supposed to do was start companies. And, you know, I don't know, I'd always wanted to start a company and kind of met this Mexican guy on the internet. And so it's like sort of standard story, you know, graduate from college, meet a Mexican on the internet and start a company. I don't know. It's the boy meets girl, you know.
And then starts coming, and you survive .com and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't really a .com. You know, we were focused on sort of a boutique company, really focused on the Linux desktop in 1999. So this made us kind of like, I don't know, on the edge of relevance at that point. So we weren't really so .com centric as to attract, you know, insane levels of funding and bubble ourselves and just sort of disappear after a year or two. That didn't happen. We were much more focused on kind of building out the technology the Linux desktop needed. That was what was interesting to us. So I think starting a company was sort of incidental to our interest in actually just like hacking and writing code and hiring, you know, our friends from the Linux community to build the things that are now a part of this desktop. You know, at the time, the idea of a Linux desktop was ridiculous. You know, I mean, the community of people working in the Linux desktop were really just geeks writing code for other geeks to use. We were writing terminal emulators and a GUI cron tab front end. So the idea was if you had a GUI cron tab front end, then you could use a Linux desktop. So we've really, you know, learned a lot since then. And I think, you know, this desktop that we're showing here at the show, I think, shows that. SLED 10 is unbelievable. I mean, we're getting huge response from our customers and stuff. So, you know, but that doesn't really answer your question, which was tell us about.
Actually, let's back up for a minute. Why Linux? Why did you get involved in Linux? What started the whole thing?
I mean, I don't know. In like 1993 or something, I had a gateway PC that my dad bought me, and you know, I had Windows and everything on it, but I wanted to try other operating systems, so I installed OS 2. And that was a not good experience.
And then
I found Linux. If I went to the local university and I put 50 floppy disks inside a computer, I could walk out with, you know, SLS or Slackware or whatever and install that on my machine. I could do a lot of fun things. I mean, it came with a program that allowed me to list all the prime numbers, you know, or to factor a number, and my Windows machine didn't have that. So that got me interested. You know, the problem was if you had those Fuji floppies, I remember that you get a bad block on one of those, and then you have to like go back, ride your bicycle back to the university, and you know, get 50 more floppies copied. But that was why I started using it, and then I just got involved since then in Linux and open source, and you know, Linux was starting to see some success on the server even that early. You know, we had people like Amazon.com saying we're using Linux on the server. We had people like Oracle and IBM starting to throw their weight behind it on the server. And so the natural sort of green field or untouched area was the desktop. And from my perspective as a naive college student, you know, for every server that's out there, there's like 50 desktops, right? So if we can get Linux to work on the desktops, which by the way is where I was using it mostly, then, you know, wouldn't that be really cool? So that was, you know, pretty simple motivation, I think. So
we got the romance part of the conversation down. We've got the, like, inspired youth idealism part of the conversation. Tell us about the dynamic tension. Small company absorbed into a large company like Novell.
Yeah.
Startup environment to a well-established company. What's that transition been like for the people that you were working
with?
Yeah,
I mean, okay, so, yeah, so it's like a 75-person company focusing on trying to take on, you know, the entire huge desktop market. You know, it's a David and Goliath story of ridiculous proportions. You know, so you know, when Novell kind of approached us and we started talking, you know, we realized if we can kind of combine some of our ideas and our technology with a big, huge global company that can put on a show like this and have chairs like this, and, you know, then maybe we could, you know, sort of accomplish a lot more. You know, when we started talking to Novell, we didn't really know what Novell was. You know, to me, Novell was just a netware company. You know, I had seen some kind of TV ad where there was a fish in a bowl that, like, tries to jump into another bowl or something.
It changes. Yeah,
that was like that was what I knew of Novell. So we were kind of surprised to find out there were some really smart, interesting people trying to lead the company into Linux. And we were offered a chance to be a part of that and to help shape that. And I think we've done that. I mean, there hasn't been this big change until, like, now I have to act like a big company person or anything like that. We still have a startup environment in what we're doing. I mean, the team that built SLED 10 is a startup team. You know, all those desktop effects, all that stuff that you saw, for those of you who are sitting here earlier, you know, all the cube and all that stuff, like, one guy wrote most of that. You know, I mean, it's not like we have some big corporate white button-down shirt team of people building that at Novell. It's one guy, David Reevman. He lived in Sweden. You know, he likes to run. You know, I mean,
apparently there were rumors that he was, like, putting floppy disks on a burrow and running them over the mountainside or something.
He used to live in a barn for a while, so we had to. It was hard to communicate with him then. He's kind of an eccentric guy, but yeah. So, but that's what it's like. It's like a startup team now, and the difference is the product that we produce as a result. You know. It gets this sort of huge marketing channel associated with it. The other thing, of course, is that as Zimian, we didn't have a Linux distribution. And so the combination, I think, is really important. It's not just Zimian and Novell, but Zimian, SUSE, and Novell. You know, we went out after Zimian was acquired by Novell, and we bought SUSE. And, you know, the idea was, here we have, by market share, the number two Linux distribution, but in terms of the engineering process and the quality of the product, the number one Linux distribution. If we can combine that with some of our desktop technologies, I think that was really exciting to us. And, you know, the result now is that we have one platform. We have the best Linux server, and we have the best Linux desktop. One platform, you know, it all comes together in one code. The kernel for our desktop and the kernel for our server are bit for bit identical. You know, the only difference is the server doesn't include OpenOffice.
That's the whole learning skills thing. Somebody who knows one side.
It's not just skills. I mean, we just have to work with hardware vendors once so that their, you know, SATA drives work on the desktop or the server. So that's really nice. So I think, you know, putting all those pieces together, I think we're the best positioned of anybody. I mean, if you look at what, you know, our competitors are doing, if you look at their Linux, there's nothing like the level of innovation in their desktop product that you see in ours. And so I think this combination of, you know, great engineering process, great platform, good marketing, and a global sales force, and the fact that we can, like, write all this great code and innovate is awesome. So I'm really excited about that.
Can we take a second to just kind of get your view on the current state of the desktop?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always tried to be as realistic as possible talking about this, because my feeling is if we go out there and we say, everyone should grab and install a Linux desktop right now, and everyone tries to, and then they all fail, you know, they won't come back again for 10 years. So, you know, we've tried to, you know, so when we released Novell Linux Desktop 9 2 years ago, we said, this is for technical users. This is for people who are doing transactional work, like it's a point-of-sale device. With SLED 10, we're making a much bigger statement. We're saying, if you're a basic office worker, then you're ready to use the desktop. You know, if you use email and calendar and a word processor and that kind of stuff all day, then you can use the desktop now. And that's over 50% of all corporate desktop users now. So I think what's left, we need to have a couple of big public wins. We need to have a couple companies stand up and say, we replaced 20,000 Windows desktops with Linux desktops. It worked. Our systems are more secure, and we saved a lot of money. And we're waiting for that to happen now. And, well, I mean, we're not just waiting for it to happen, but
there's,
you know,
press announcements that came out today, right?
There's some announcements today. I mean, I think having the product is a really important thing, but also we're working really closely with a number of companies doing pilots that, you know, I think by the end of the year we're going to have some big reference announcements that'll be pretty shocking to Microsoft and to everyone else. And once a few of those happen, once people say, hey, I saw my peer companies do this, and the CIO didn't get fired. In fact, he saved money. And then when Vista comes out, he can actually argue with Microsoft and say, hey, I'm 20% Linux now, and I want to be 50% Linux next year. You better give me a better price, Microsoft, on Vista. You know, that's real power for the CIO that he didn't have before. And that's cool. I mean, heterogeneity makes people more powerful, makes end users more powerful. So, and it makes standards more important. So that's all good stuff. So I think that's the next step. That's what we need to see
next. Okay, so you see some of this actually in motion right now. This is starting to happen.
The momentum is huge right now. I mean, give us, 4 to 6 months, and we're going to have some announcements of successful pilots. And that's when all these people who are waiting on the sidelines and saying, we're watching the technology, it looks interesting, they're going to say, wow, this big company did it. We're going to do it too.
So we talk a lot of times about basic office workers and things like that. And as we start to see Linux break into that segment and actually become relevant in business like that, what becomes the next big hurdle that the desktop has to do? What do you see as the next set of challenges?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things we're running into that are sort of small. One of the big ones is every company has internal websites that only work in IE, basically. So how do we make those websites work in Firefox? So we're working on that. We have a plugin for Firefox we're developing that that basically it's like uses Grease Monkey, so it rewrites the web page as you load
cool.
it and takes all your IE-specific DHTML and JavaScript and rewrites it so it works in Firefox. And we're expanding that with we've got engineers sitting at customer sites, loading the web pages, looking at the HTML and JavaScript and improving this plugin. So we'll have that one nailed pretty soon. The next step is applications. So if you've got Windows-specific apps that don't exist on Linux and you need them on Linux, that's the next big hurdle. And there's a variety of steps we can take there. We can help port the app. If it's written in .NET, it will run in Mono with System Windows Forms. If it's an app they only use once a month, put it on a bunch of Windows servers and use VNC or something like that to remotely display it onto your Linux machine. Or use virtualization and just bring up Windows on your Linux machine once a month to run that app. So there's, that's kind of the next big step. I think what we've shown is Linux desktop's good enough. You look at our desktop effects, you look at our search, we can innovate. We can do things that Apple, that no one's done before. So the next step is just to show it, just to have some people say we're using it. Not just geeks, people who bathe on a daily basis and, that kind of thing. Like, people who are credible or whatever in the financial world. So
people with hair that doesn't necessarily fly away on them.
Right, exactly.
Do we have a goal for the next release of SLED? I mean, is there some specific market that we're going after or type of users that we're going after on the next release?
I mean, right now we're really focused on SLED 10. We just released it like a couple weeks ago. So we're pretty much totally focused on making that successful. And I think we've set a pretty huge goal for that, which is, we can go after 50% of the desktop users and companies with it because it's ready for those users. I mean, in the future, things we might think about are the consumer. Eventually you kind of say, well, I want to be able to use the same desktop at home that I use at work and vice versa. And one of the big challenges with the consumer is most consumers get support not from their operating system vendor, but from other consumers. So there's someone a friend, a family member, someone in church. So how do we build that base of support out? I mean, that's the thing. So maybe we look at that in SLED 11. I don't know. That's an option. The other option is to look more at the power users in companies. But, I mean, look, if we can get like 3% of the global desktop market share, which, by the way, we're ready to do now.
Yeah.
I mean, the product's ready. And that's an enormous achievement. That would totally rewrite the landscape for Novell and for Linux. And so I think that's kind of what we're focused on next. And we don't need any new functionality. I mean, the desktop doesn't need to get better in order to do that. It's mostly just getting there and deploying it.
Now, you talked about, a little while ago, you talked about Xeemium was comprised originally of a lot of the people in the community that really you thought were quite brilliant people. We have a lot of those people now in Novell still to this day. And people follow blogs like Robert Love's blog, or they can follow Joe Shaw's blog and those kind of things. There's different ways out there. You've had one as well.
Yeah.
Seems like yours has kind of gone a little bit quiet lately, though. People used to follow you on that. What's happened there?
Yeah, I guess I just haven't, sometimes like blogging every day becomes like some kind of burden. Like you have to, you're on stage every day or something. So I've been so focused on what we're doing with SLED 10 that that is my blog. You can get a DVD of my blog here, basically. So you can kind of see what we've been working
on. Install that and find out what Nat's been doing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been
So I've met several of the people that work with you, and they've just absolutely blown me away. People like Jeremy Allison, people like Michael Meeks. Can you talk about, just for a minute, some of the cool people, not just on your team, but some of these amazing people that we've brought into Novell recently?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, one of the things about working in Linux is that it's really easy to hire great people, because the community sort of acts as this automatic sieve for talent. You know, so you don't need to take people through like some rigorous hiring process where they go through a 6-level interview phase and then you give them programming problems, because you've worked with them for the last 2 years. You know, you've seen if they can telecommute. You've seen the kind of code that they produce. You've seen how good a communicator they are. So you generally have a pretty good idea of what working with them is going to be like already.
It's meritocratic in a way. You've seen the person's merit.
Yeah, you have, I mean, what you can find out by, you know, people bring in interview candidates and they say, you have 12 coins. One of those coins weighs more or less than the other coins. Determine what it is in three weighings. Like, is this really going to tell you, you know, give you a clear idea of what working with this guy on building, you know, better open office support is going to be like? I mean, it gives you an idea of their raw mental aptitude, but like other than that, I don't, you know, not really. So I think we have a great idea of, you know, and the other thing is we know a bunch of really quality people just by working in the community. So when we started Zimian, we just made a list of the top people and hired all of them. And, you know, and that was a pretty easy way to build a team. Now the downside is that they're all distributed all over the world when you do that. So you relocate as many of them as you can to Boston. And, you know, you end up with a guy in New Zealand, a guy in Australia, a guy in Canada, a guy in Texas, But you were used to working with them that way anyway, so it's not that much of a downside. So we have some awesome people on the team, and they're all pretty unique personalities. I mean, Robert Love, who's our architect, our lead architect on the desktop now, is a great guy. He's most famous as a kernel developer who wrote the a Linux kernel programming book, which was a bestseller on Amazon. It's kind of the kernel 2.6 reference that's out there. So he's awesome. He's sort of a part-time hobbyist economist, economics guy also. So, you know, if you read his blog, you get a lot of that kind of stuff in it, which I find really boring. Then there's Michael Meeks, who's one of our developers. He's our lead developer on OpenOffice. He lives in Cambridge, UK, right? So he's remote there. And he just had three kids, like, in 9-month intervals. And so Michael's awesome. I mean,
He's a distinguished engineer title.
He's a distinguished engineer at Novell, and you know, he's really responsible for opening up the OpenOffice community overall. So OpenOffice was really, you know, it originated as StarOffice at Sun, and you know, they had a lot of trouble accepting patches and kind of moving to a real community model where the development was done on the mailing lists. And Michael was a real community guy, and he actually just built a Tinderbox and a Bugzilla and a whole bunch of things that in the OpenOffice world weren't quite as open. And so he's sort of it affected this major cultural change in the OpenOffice community that's been pretty, pretty great. So now you can really get involved in OpenOffice much more easily. OpenOffice is a beast. It's like, you know, 12 million lines of code, you know, relatively monolithic compared to some other things.
And it wasn't really designed as open source originally, was it?
No, it was a team working together in Hamburg, the Star Division team that Marco Boeri's sold to Sun. And, you know, Marco had this vision of open sourcing it and combining with us and other people in the open source community to make an open source desktop. So they did. And Sun has stewarded the project forward. You know, we're the kind of, after Sun, we're the number two contributors to OpenOffice. And Michael's a lot of the reason for that, because he's totally prolific. He's really awesome. I mean, he led the team that did this VBA macro stuff. People thought this couldn't be done, you know, to support Visual Basic macros natively inside OpenOffice. There were tools, like Sun had a tool that would take your Microsoft Excel spreadsheets, read the macros in, and then write out an OpenOffice spreadsheet with OpenOffice macros, but it was a one-way conversion, and you could never go back. You know, so that doesn't work, because you have to change the document and then email it to your friends who are on that legacy Office suite. So we needed to have, you know, so Michael led a team that built that, and that was a huge effort, and that's been really cool. And he's also done a lot of performance work in OpenOffice too. So great. Michael's awesome. Who else do we have? David Reeveman. I mean, he's kind of, you know, rocketed to popularity. And, you know, if you do Google searches for David Reeveman now, you find all these videos of all these desktop effects, because he's the one-man show behind creating all that. I mean, he single-handedly wrote a new backend for the X server that uses GL primitives to do all the X drawing. And so basically we're able to, I mean, you can do all these great effects, but you can also do things like accelerate the rendering of web pages using the 3D hardware. Or you can draw anti-aliased fonts using the glyph cache in the 3D hardware. So you can display like, you know, 2 million characters per second, as versus 200,000 with X Core fonts. I mean, it's so powerful.
There's simple things as well, like the zoom feature, just for somebody that can't see that small macromedia-based type on a web page or anything
right,
like
yeah,
that.
All that stuff. And he wrote all those effects pretty much single-handedly too. So he's a total stud, and he's been awesome to work with. Even though he did live in a barn for a while, and that was kind of strange.
Well, let's find out. Maybe there's some questions that our audience has out there. We do something called three tough questions on our show, or however many tough questions we get usually. And does anybody have a question for Nat?
Yeah, I do have a question regarding, Novell, new Linux system. Because actually, we all know that the big company started with an M. They're going to have a new OS coming out. And then have a recent conference in Las Vegas, a hacker claimed that actually they found a security leak in 30 minutes for the new operation system. So you're saying that, Novell is trying to target on the consumer market soon. So I'm just wondering how the consumer market be confident about like the security measure that Novell is going to take.
Right. Yeah, I think so. The question was, there's a company that's releasing a new major operating system in the near future. There are some known security problems with even the late betas of that operating system. So how do we, Novell, feel about security in a desktop operating system? I just want to clarify one thing. I did not say that we will support consumers soon. We have no plans to do that in the near future. Someone asked me in 2 or 3 years what the next markets might be, and I don't know, that might be one of them. We're not consumer-focused. We're totally enterprise-focused right now because that's where the Linux desktop can win big right now. We can go to a company of 100,000 people and move 30% of them. We can move 30,000 people in one transaction from Windows to Linux. That's the way we're going to win in the marketplace, not by one consumer moves. Security, though, I think the security story we have built in Sled 10 is awesome. We have this thing called AppArmor. This is a company we bought called Immunix. Basically, Novell paid, a lot of money. I don't know if it's disclosed. To buy this company.
Probably not.
It's probably not disclosed, so I won't say how much. But we paid a bunch of money, more than $1 million, to buy a company called Immunix. And they had a security technology called AppArmor, which was proprietary for the Linux kernel. And what it did is allow you to take an application and sandbox it so that at the kernel level you can restrict what that app can do. And we open sourced this technology and put it into the Linux kernel community. So Novell bought the company and open sourced the technology. And it ships as a part of Sled 10. But what you can do is you can take Firefox and you can say Firefox can only access these network sites, or Firefox can only read or write to these directories on the disk. And at the kernel level, it's restricted from doing anything else. And it's really easy to do this because there's a little wizard that you run where you use Firefox, and then the wizard says, okay, Firefox did these 15 things, and you say, allow, deny, 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 allow, and you created a security profile for Firefox or for your email program. So that ships as a part of Sled 10, and that's a default thing. I mean, I think we also have a better security story than Windows because we have fewer users than Windows, and so there's no viruses and worms, for Linux yet. That'll change in the future, and we got to be ready for that. But I think in the meantime, the security story is undeniably, many, many orders of magnitude better on Linux today. The other thing is just the attitude we took writing Linux. I mean, Linux was written by developers on the network who are collaborating over the network. We sort of understand as a part of our culture to treat network data as dangerous. So I think, you have a sort of better default situation as a result of that. So I think security is important. We have a much better track record. I think we're much better set up to handle security concerns than that. Than Vista.
Great. So. And we'll take another question in just a sec here, but for asking a question, we can exchange sizes for you, but this is the legendary I Ask Tough Questions t-shirt. There you go.
Thanks.
Hey, Nat. I know that you have done a lot of, you and Miguel have changed a lot of things in the past. Today, what are you doing mainly at Novell? I mean, I know that you're the chief desktop architect, but like, what are you doing as far as, are you doing any coding? And to you, what is your favorite app?
What's my favorite app and what do I do? Why do they pay me? I don't know. That's a good question. Do I do coding? I mean, I probably spend about 10% of my time coding. It's pretty small these days. I write little features that are interesting to me on airplanes and trains, basically. I mean, one thing I did was that the ThinkPad laptops have a little gyroscope in them. That detects when you move the laptop, and the idea is if you knock it off a table, It can detect that it's accelerating rapidly towards the ground and automatically park the hard drive. But we have a driver for these things, so you can read the angle information out. So I made it so that if you're viewing your photos and you tilt the laptop, the display tilts automatically to fill the screen with a vertical photo. And you can move windows with your ThinkPad. I can show, if you guys want to see, I can show you
practical
later.
Practical stuff, you're saying.
Really practical things like that. I implemented some tagging stuff in our photo management app. I wrote some effects for XGL. I did some work there a little bit. But I write like 0% of the code that goes into the desktop. I mean, most of my work is working with the engineers to figure out what we do next. So, you know, I spend a lot of time talking, basically, listening.
Let's take another one right here.
Cool.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could tell us like what your rationale at Novell is about AppArmor and XGL, and you kind of have gone a different path than a lot of the other companies. Why did you guys decide to buy AppArmor as opposed to implementing SE Linux, and why did you decide to write XGL as opposed to participating with AIGLX and some of those other projects that were already underway?
Okay, those are two separate questions. I'll take them both. So I'm less close to the security side of things, but I mean, I think one of the major advantages that AppArmor has over SE Linux is that AppArmor is much, much easier to set up and to use than SE Linux. And if you look at the Fedora Devel mailing list, which, you know, we're all in the habit of doing, I know, on a daily basis, you know, you can see that, like, one of the most commonly mentioned SE Linux things is, I installed Fedora, how do I turn this damn thing off? You know, I think SE Linux is pretty hard for people to configure overall. AppArmor is a real simple wizard that just steps you through configuring it. It's got a simple architecture overall. You know, I think that provides a lot of value to people. I mean, you can walk around the booth here and get a demo of how easy it is to do.
There's,
and like
there's
a
no
non-technical
labeling.
User in about 5 minutes can create a profile and secure his applications. And that's how things should work is, you know, because people have different apps. You know, admins need to be able to do this stuff. So that's I think a major advantage of AppArmor over SE Linux.
It was also done. AppArmor was written by the guys who invented the Linux security module, as I understand it as well. They were architects of that. And
that's
so
right.
These guys actually made a lot of the foundation in the kernel that enables things like SE Linux to work. So these guys were the experts.
Yep. The next question is, why did we write XGL? Are we working with AIGLX? I think the first thing is, you know, when we talk about all these desktop effects, we tend not to talk about XGL, but to talk about desktop effects. And really, this is focused on CompIS, the window and compositing manager that we use in the desktop, which has the plugin architecture that implements all the effects. Because whatever underlying technology you use, XGL or AIGLX, we're hoping that we see everyone converge around CompIS. It's desktop agnostic. It works in GNOME and KDE. It's got plugins for both of those things. It doesn't care whether you use XGL or AIGLX underneath. It's got a totally great plugin architecture with dependencies between plugins and stuff like that. So we can build effects as plugins and just plug them into CompIS. So we want to see that thing rise to primacy. That's the most important thing for us, I think, in the sort of technology strategy department. But to answer your question quite simply, look, we did this stuff. We innovated this. I mean, XGL, we started writing a year and a half ago. AIGLX did not exist. It did not exist until a few months ago. And frankly, it does not work today. I have not seen it working. Also, AIGLX will only work if you have open source drivers or if you get the various proprietary driver authors to do some fairly significant modifications to their drivers, which ATI and NVIDIA have not indicated a willingness to do. There are three major video chipset vendors out there, ATI, NVIDIA, and Intel. We support them all out of the box with SLED 10, and we're not asking ATI and NVIDIA to do major changes to support that. So XGL allows us to support everything now. Plus, XGL is probably a much more long-term architecture for graphics, you know, because we're able to really accelerate all the drawing primitives. Because, you know, we basically wrote a GL backend for the X server. Whereas accelerated indirect GLX is sort of basically saying, let's take the existing driver model and let's extend its lifetime as long as we can. So you're going to be hobbling along on crutches for another 10 years using the existing driver model, basically. So, I mean, in the end, maybe we'll use both. AIGLX for some cards and XGL for some other cards. I mean, I really don't care, personally. What I care about is that people get their desktop effects. And the only way to get that to happen right now is XGL. Because that's the one that works with all the video chipsets that are out there. You know, one of the things we want to do next with XGL is talk about multi-head displays. So if you have, you know, three or four monitors, you know, you can have one display that you're working on and another one that shows a different face of the cube, you know, and another one that shows the cube spinning. And you know, you can do kind of multi-monitor accelerated, you know, really futuristic workspace stuff like Minority Report. You can, you know, start to do that stuff. You know, we can implement a lot of that in software. So that's some of the stuff we want to do next with XGL. I think that'll be real hard to do with AI GLX. You know, but then again, I don't care. If we all end up using AI GLX in 10 years, it doesn't affect anything. So, you know, but I guess to answer your question, you know, I think in both of those areas we led. With AppArmor, you know, the Linux security model we wrote, I mean, or the AppArmor guys wrote, the Immunix guys initially were the authors of. With XGL, we started a year before AI GLX existed. So, you know, right. So I think that answers the question. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Nat, for an interview and everything. And what I want to tell everybody here is that Novell Open Audio is actually a production of Novell Users International in conjunction with Novell Incorporated. Mm-hmm. All of our content is pretty much directed by our listening community. If you want to find out more about the show, you can go to novell.com/openaudio. You can also on that site rate any of our episodes that we put out. It is a podcast that you can download onto your iPod or other portable player. So it's all fed through RSS. It's in OGG as well as in MP3 format. And I think that pretty much does it. Oh, you can send us email, openaudio@novell.com. So that's it for this time. We'll see you next time. Thanks, everyone, and thanks to Nat Friedman.